The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Hi there, it's Kyle Bailey. Again, we're taking this time to go really in-depth at COVID-19 and also the local response to it. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer on with us. Bob, good afternoon.
It's good to be with you.
And a busy day. I know you've been out on the road, busy tackling a number of things. Let's begin. We're gonna talk about sports and contact tracing and travel and many other things during our time together today. But as we have been doing generally, let's take a look at COVID-19. As a public health official and the county's public health officer, what you're seeing from the world, national, state, and local level. Let's talk about the big picture first for the planet.
Well, it is still an incredibly active pandemic worldwide. We're gaining hundreds of thousands of cases a day. In fact, yesterday was far and away the most new cases ever at 183,000 cases in one day. You know, until about 3 weeks ago, we'd never been over 100, and now at 183,000 cases in one day, this is really, really, really a rapid rise. We're seeing a lot of cases in Brazil, Peru, and Chile in our hemisphere, and then in Russia, India, and Pakistan in Asia. So we're seeing several parts of the world with very active outbreaks, and we're concerned about that because some of those are really big countries. So India has about four times the population of the United States. And when they have this many cases, it's a real worry for the worldwide disease burden. In the U.S., we're still adding cases very quickly. We've been in the low 20s, but we're now in the mid-20s or upper 20s, so the number of cases in the U.S. is also increasing. Now, some of this increase is because there's more testing. So maybe a quarter of the increase is new testing. But three-quarters of the increase really is increased number of cases. And we're starting to see a huge number of cases in Florida, Texas, and California that each had over 3,000 new cases yesterday. So with over 3,000 new cases, the ability of those states to adequately test, to adequately contact trace, and to adequately keep this under control, they're starting to lose control. And once you lose control, then the things that are left to help you fight this virus are really very, very, very limited. In Oregon, we've also seen some increased activity. You remember we've been talking about this for months, but in the later part of May, we were down to 20 to 80 cases a day. But starting at about the end of May and the beginning of June, we've seen a steady increase in cases. So that over the last week, almost every day has been more than 100, and some days have been over 200. And so 200 cases a day for Oregon is a lot of cases. Now, some of this is because we're doing more testing, but in Oregon, the overwhelming majority is increased transmission. Now, this increased transmission is occurring in big outbreaks. So we've seen a big outbreak in the Oregon State Penitentiary, big outbreak in a couple of food processing plants, and then a big outbreak associated with a church in LeGrand. But even taking those out, we're still seeing an increase in cases. And what these are what we call sporadic cases, cases that are not really related to other cases. And because they're not really related to other cases, we worry that there's disease spread in the community that we're missing. Now, when we get to Douglas County, yes, we've had a few increasing cases over the last week. But almost all of those cases, we knew where they came from. There were several groups in the Douglas County who visited relatives out of state. The out-of-state relatives got sick, were tested to have COVID. And then when the people from Douglas County came back, they were quarantined and then tested and found out that they had COVID. So although we've seen a bunch of cases over the last week, these cases are all very well tied to previous cases and all have been, we think, perfectly quarantined. So we do not expect to see new cases from them. Again, we're not seeing very much unexpected disease. We've not had an unexpected positive case in several weeks. And so still in Douglas County, we're doing well, but we're not very far from California. We're not very far from the Grand, and we're certainly not very far from Lincoln County.
When we look at the worldwide picture, how much difference is there in various countries, certainly industrialized versus third world, in their readiness at this point to address their situation with the COVID-19?
Well, we worry that some of the cases that are having the biggest outbreaks now, Brazil, India, and Pakistan, are not well established to go ahead and take care of those. We think even on a good day, India and Pakistan's healthcare system is really quite overloaded. So adding all of these new cases makes it hard. The other thing that we've seen is the amount of testing in those areas is very low. So that, again, remember, we talk about wanting a positivity rate of 2 to 5%. In some of these places, the positivity rate is over 50%. That is, half of the tests they do are positive, suggesting they're missing many cases and they're not anywhere near having this under control.
And what about around America? You talked about some of the increases. Certainly Florida was cited in many reports today. Is part of this as well as different sectors, different areas begin to reopen, people getting back out there, being crossing paths with more people, and not social distancing?
Yes. So we modeled this in Oregon. What would happen if we had an increase in contact or decrease in social distancing? And our modeling suggested that as we moved back, we would see an increase in cases. So this increase that we've seen in Oregon is not the least bit surprising, and it's not because there's anything new or different with the virus. It is because of decreased social distancing.
And now that we are firmly in summer, it's almost 90 degrees right now, going to be about 95 tomorrow. People want to be out. People, sort of felt like they couldn't go anywhere at all for a while, and so it's kind of a pent-up demand to get out and do something. So talk about masks, et cetera, and the social distancing, and maybe go into depth again for people who have just sort of half listened before as to why that's important.
Well, social distancing is so critically important, and social distancing is important because we think almost always this disease is transmitted from one person to another via respiratory droplets. And respiratory droplets are those tiny little spittle bubbles that we all make when we talk. We make more when we sing. We make more when we yell. And so those are how we think the disease is transmitted. Again, almost all of the transmission disease is indoor transmission. And so we worry about indoor things much more than outdoor things. So with this nice weather here, we really are encouraging people to get out. So get out, go for a walk, go for a bike ride. We'll talk a little bit later about going to a picnic or going to a ball game. We think all of those would be perfectly acceptable.
I was out yesterday. I didn't get to walk as much as I normally do. I was doing some other things with Father's Day. But I think I did about 6 miles walking around town and watching people. And again, I was seeing folks, I didn't know them, but I'm just guessing, a number of gatherings where people were in a parking lot gathered together, just two or three, four people. Even somebody at the Half Shell, the Band Shell, it's back up in Stewart Park, a group that was gathering there. They were several feet apart from each other. And seems like more people are kind of taking advantage of, let's get some sunshine and let's be able to spend some time with their family and friends that way.
And that's exactly what we're suggesting. So we're certainly not wanting people to be totally isolated. Being outdoors, socially distanced, we think is a safe activity. What we're worried about is indoor activities, especially indoor activities where there's lots of close contact, long close contact, and especially ones where people are yelling or singing. So, for example, this church in the Grand, where they had over 200 cases associated with this church in the Grand, apparently this group had lots of contact, close contact, singing contact, and indoor contact, worrisome kinds of contact. And because of that, they're having now over 200 cases at that church.
Wow. And obviously, so many things are not happening this year in terms of summer concerts and a lot of the things that people really look forward to in the Umpqua Valley and everywhere else, but just to take our life in particular, and even many of the things that I end up helping with or emceeing in the community, not one of them is happening this year. And so people are just kind of feeling, you know, isolated and wanting to get out. So the trick of maintaining that with balance and social distancing seems to be sort of the tightrope that maybe folks need to walk on.
And that is a tightrope. You know, in the past, we would just do things and not even think about social distancing or getting disease, because there's very little disease circulating in Oregon. But now, with COVID circulating in Oregon, I think that has to be in the front of mind. But again, indoor activities are much more dangerous than outdoor activities. Activities where you're long with one or two or three people are much more dangerous than short encounters. So I'd certainly encourage people to go out, enjoy the nice weather, get some exercise, but be very careful about social distancing.
As we look at COVID-19, both here and elsewhere, is there any new things coming out, different aspects of the virus, things like that, that you've learned in the past week?
Well, there are some new things coming out. One of them is that children seem not to get it very often. So in an outbreak, when there's a certain amount of disease in the other age groups, kids seem to be less likely to get the disease. When they do get the disease, they tend to be less sick, and they tend to spread it less. And so that's a good harbinger for reopening up, especially K-6 in the fall. So we think that probably could be done as a relatively low-risk activity. However, as we get older, we start to transmit it more. We start to get sicker. So we're a little worried about colleges, because colleges certainly have people of the age group that are much more likely to transmit.
Interesting. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. Going to take a break. More when we come back on Talking Health. It'll be a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 420 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Kyle Bailey here with our in-depth look at COVID-19 and efforts to deal with the situation here in Douglas County, joined by County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer this afternoon. Well, summertime for folks generally means some level of travel. We talked about the desire in the last segment to get out more, be doing more things with the warm weather. And as people, Dr. Bob, begin to evaluate, what do I do, what do I not do? For instance, we had Father's Day yesterday. After a little discussion back and forth, we ended up not going to Lane County, where my wife's parents are, and decided not to do that this time around. And even things like that, that was a bit of a tough decision.
Those are very difficult decisions. And so I know there are thousands of people making those kinds of decisions almost every day. And Father's Day was especially difficult because people certainly did want to visit their dads. And by definition, your dads are older. And so that is a risk. My recommendation was, if you want to visit, do as much outdoors as you can. Again, outdoors seems to be so much safer than indoors. Certainly, if you're sick, stay home. Wash your hands in between things. But other than that, we think you can actually visit if you follow those rules.
And I think probably one of the things, too, to look at on a trip like that where you're going an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours away, is sort of making preparations so that if you are going to, in the case of yesterday for some folks, visit with a couple of parents or a parent, that you do it in such a way that you don't end up putting yourself in positions where you have to cross paths with other people. For instance, maybe you meet up, you know, like you said, outside, you know, in a backyard, in a park, something like that. But also even things like checking ahead of time so that you don't have to be making a food purchase or a gas purchase or whatever when you're out of the area, and basically go from point A to B, enjoy that time, turn around, and come back to Douglas County.
That's great advice. You know, in the past, you wouldn't think about necessarily stopping along the way, maybe having food at a restaurant, sitting down for a half an hour with other people. That's the kind of risky behaviors that can lead to spread of the disease. And again, Douglas County has one of the lowest rates of disease anywhere in the world. Okay, so we have about 30 number of cases in 110,000 population. So we only have about 300 cases per million, which is an incredibly low rate, lower than any state in the union, lower than almost anywhere in the world. So we can sometimes take for granted how few cases we have here, but it's not just, some of it is luck, but some of it is lots of hard work in tracking down every one of these cases.
What about people that maybe because of the type of job they have business-wise, would want to or sometimes need to go out of the area? Obviously, a lot of business meetings are being held now on Zoom, and a lot of people have found that they're more effective because you don't have to spend the time getting from point A to B to meet, and you can, in the case of, you know, a business presentation, you can access that or send it ahead of time, et cetera. But there are times, and certainly certain industries, in fact, you think about people like truck drivers, et cetera, that's not a business trip, maybe in the typical way we think about them, but there are definitely people that do need to be out on the road on a daily basis.
There are, and so we know that much of our country depends upon the economy, where people do travel for meetings, they do travel to sell things, they do travel to go ahead and do service on things that are being sold. And so we know that people are out there. But again, it's mostly about social distancing. We think that very short contacts like picking up food from drive-thru, paying for gas with a credit card, as long as you maintain some social distance, and especially if you wear a mask, that the risk for those people is much decreased. Now, you can never get the risk to zero, but the risk can be really low. Again, when we looked at it, it's mostly, most of the transmissions have been either in the family or in a place like church or work, where people have spent a lot of time together really close. You know, we cannot find very many cases that that we can't track down. And so almost all of these cases have had those characteristics.
Now, are you talking about local cases or beyond that?
Well, certainly our local cases. When we look at cases, for example, in Portland, they're beginning to see cases now where they can track them, and that would suggest that there may be a lot of disease out there. And so you'll remember there was a time in the end of March where we had a couple of cases a day. We couldn't track all of those, so we knew that there was some disease buried in the community. Well, again, we're not seeing any of that now. And in fact, a recent study was done where they sampled several hundred households in Corvallis, and then several hundred households in Bend on a random basis. And these were asymptomatic people, and almost no one was positive. So it was far less than 1% of asymptomatic people were positive in those two areas. And I would bet if we did in Roseburg, we would see the same. So we don't think there's a lot of asymptomatic disease out there. But we know that there's a bunch of asymptomatic disease in the Portland area, and clearly a lot in California.
As we've gone through the last 3 months, a lot of methods for business have changed. I happened to get a new debit card for one of my accounts a week or so ago, and I don't remember the technical term. It's such a new thing to me. But it has something, it has a chip. Those are very common. But it also has something where, in fact, I made a purchase this morning where all I had to do was hold it up, and the device from where I was purchasing something was able to just basically scan it, and it beeped on one end or the other, or maybe both, and didn't even have to put it in, you know, the debit or Visa machine or whatever. So we've seen a lot of strides technologically in a very quick amount of time. Some of those were coming anyway, but things like that certainly reduce things even more.
Yeah, I believe that we're going to make some changes based on this pandemic that will stick. So, for example, I think that video conferencing is very much likely to become a predominant way we do business with people outside the area. You know, in the past, I would go to Portland four or five times a month to drive up to Portland, spend 3-4 hours driving there, go to meetings, and then come on back. It would be a very long day. I can now do those meetings. I still have time to go ahead and be at home, not waste gas, not have other expenses. So I believe teleconferencing is going to be the way of the future. And I think other contactless ways of doing things, like you talked about with your credit card. So in the past, when you used to do it and you put the credit card in and somebody else would touch the credit card, then you'd have a receipt that people would sign and you'd store here. Right now, I think almost all the receipts you can get them by email. You can do a lot of stuff without using a lot of paper. And that may help our environment as well as help our health.
You know, it's interesting, too, when you talked about that, as this has been evolving pre-pandemic, some of the places that have different outlets that have gone to these newer, we used to call them cash registers. That's the ancient term. But they've gone to some of these new things where you have that and they can just, you know, they just text you the receipt, things like that. Honestly, for me, that took a little bit of getting used to because I like the little slip of paper and then I can get home and write it in my accounting book and all of that. But with everybody having online access generally to their accounts and things like that, I have been saying yes less often when people ask if I want a receipt, knowing that I can go home and double check the transaction later. And, you know, so far I've not had a problem with that. It's just kind of making a shift there in how you do certain things.
Well, even an old dinosaur like me can learn new things. And I think learning these new things have been really quite positive. And we may find that this is good for the environment as well as good for the economy.
So when you talk about travel and going out and just, you know, deciding whether or not you do things, you mentioned the outdoors being so much a better environment. And that's got to bode well for summertime in Oregon. I've certainly thought about going over to the Oregon coast and, you know, walking down the beach and things like that that people just love to do during this time of year.
Well, I think being on the coast at the beach, a very, very safe thing to do. It's usually windy, which blows these viral particles around and makes it infected at the coast. So I'm good with that. However, I would caution, you know, that there's a big outbreak in the Newport area. And so that, you know, if you then go to the coast and go to a restaurant for a few hours in Newport, that there's certainly some risk there. So, again, let's look at the low-risk things. The low-risk things are being outside, being in your family group, traveling in your car, all very low-risk activities. It's when you add new people in, especially new indoor activities, that we begin to worry.
You know, it's interesting, too. I've seen some information over the past couple of weeks in particular as we now officially are in summer as of Saturday. Even, and this has been has varied from region to region and things, but different articles I've seen, even about, for instance, folks that go to motels that are traveling for whatever reason, that those are often being handled differently in terms of the expectations about, do you have people in and out of your room, or if you're there for a couple of nights, do they just leave things outside and let you reset towels and things like that? You know, just a whole lot of little changes in that arena.
Yes, I think there will be. I think, for example, some hotels are not doing daily cleanings anymore. You know, the daily cleanings where they would come in and change the towels and make the beds and whatever. They realize that probably at home that you don't have a maid come in every day. And so they may be able to do this without that daily service. And that might be safer for both the person who's doing the cleaning as well as for you. And so I think we may see some changes there. You know, a few years ago, you'd see hotels would say, if you don't want to have your towels changed every day, let us know and we'll save the water and the detergent that goes in those. And so I think that some of these things may be for the better.
Well, and there were things as well. For instance, I was tracking some motel sites just to see what people were doing in different parts of the state. And for instance, oftentimes with a motel stay, if they have a restaurant available, that's part of your package, or a you know, breakfast buffet, things like that. And actually saw one, I can't remember where it was, but it was in Oregon, where they were not doing the complimentary breakfast where you know, kind of pick things and make things up yourself. But they essentially had two or three options, and you would go down and between 6 and 9 a.m. or whatever the time frame was, and they actually will now hand you a bag that has those items in it, and you can take them back to your room.
Yeah, so it's different. And what I've told people, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's different, and we should embrace some change. Some of the stuff may actually be a little bit better. And so I strongly, strongly encourage people to kind of go with the flow, be gentle. I mean, some of these things are going to be a little harder, but if we're more gentle with each other, we may well be able to do well.
Going to take a break. Another segment when we come back with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Vandenhoeffer. Still to come, we'll talk about sports, also contact tracing, and more. And of course, as always, a podcast after 5 at 541radio.com. Talking Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, sunshine, nearly 90 degrees in the Umpqua Valley. Kyle, the LA County Public Health Officer, Dr. Bob Vandenhoeffer, our weekly in-depth look at COVID-19 here on Talking Health. Well, summertime means sports. Generally, we've seen so many sports not get played over the spring and now into the summer. In Oregon, some things have loosened up for areas in Phase 2 in particular. And let's talk about the issue of sports, baseball now being played, as are a few other things. But a lot of sports are in kind of up in the air, and it's really unknown what's ahead. As one of the governor's advisors here in the health arena, what kinds of things are being looked at when you make recommendations and offer input regarding sports in Oregon?
Well, we don't comment on the specific things we're talking about, but I will tell you overall, when we look at sports, there are some sports that are very high risk, some sports that are very low risk. And again, you could probably figure out which ones are high risk and low risk by my suggestions that outdoor is much safer than indoor, and that social distancing is important. So not surprisingly, I think, cross-country running is pretty darn safe. You know, you're going to be running apart from each other over a 5K course, and so we think cross-country running is safe. Now, it's not totally safe because team meetings we worry about. We worry about buses, getting the kids there. But in general, cross-country is a pretty safe sport. On the other hand, we have sports like football, which we worry a lot about. Because in football, it's pretty hard to maintain social distancing. So, for example, the guys on the line are just 18 inches apart. And they've got to be 18 inches apart. It's not like you could socially distance them 6 feet apart. And football teams tend to be large. So as the football team is around, you have lots of different contacts. And much of what happens for football involves really breathing on each other with tackles and everything else. So football is a high-risk sport. So the goal at this point is to start with the lower-risk things like singles tennis, swimming, and cross-country, and to allow practice for higher-risk sports like football. Baseball is considered to be not the lowest risk, but pretty low-risk. You know, almost always by the way people are around in the field, you are socially distanced. Now, there's a little bit of contact between the batter, the catcher, and the umpire, but that's pretty small. There's a little bit of contact, for example, first baseman and somebody on base. But again, those are relatively small contact, and we think you can do baseball pretty safely. For watching baseball, what we want is for people to be in the stands. Again, you're outdoors for the most part, and to be 6 feet away from other non-family members. So if you go with the kids and you've been with them all day, you can sit together. But if there are people you don't know, you can sit 6 feet apart. Now, the docs are great. They're not usually that busy, so that you can usually get a place where you can see and sit where you won't be right on top of everybody. So I think with those precautions, I think baseball's a pretty safe game.
You know, I walked past Legion Field in between games, I think, late yesterday afternoon, and just taking a look at how things were laid out as the docs had put out the information. They had a limit of 250 people. It was nowhere near that many folks that were around when I went by. And of course, that stadium, if you have people in, you know, the ultimate seating pattern for maximum capacity, it's a huge, huge area there, a huge amount of people, rather, that you can put in that area. So 250, you could be socially distanced, and They didn't have the concession stands open, and it seemed like a number of things like that were going on. I also had heard, though not officially, that some of the these baseball teams around the area that are meeting, whereas in past years you might all pile into a big van, when there's a need to go elsewhere to play another team, that folks are likely going to be taking their own vehicles just to stay more distant. Maybe family members come with a player, things like that. So folks trying to do it safely, it looks like, but still get some of the recreation benefits of being outside.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're asking for. We're asking for people to be creative. And, for example, families going together and driving the kids to the games, a little bit of a bother for the parents, but again, a much safer way to do it.
Well, and other sports, I know that the city of Roseburg Parks and Recreation Department, it's been kind of evolving guidelines, what they're being told, and just getting the word that the splash pad opened up today. That's not a sport, but in terms of an activity and outdoors and things like that, it sounds like the health officials are sort of taking things as people ask about them, because, of course, when you put out initial guidance, you probably can't think of every possible thing that's out there because it varies community to community. But I understand some folks already had, though they hadn't put out the word as to which day it was going to open, when the splash pad is open today, and some folks enjoying that for their kids this afternoon. And I did notice while I was out walking, you would get, and I have no idea if they were families or close friends or whatever, but I saw a few groups of people kicking soccer balls around and doing some things like that. Out, you know, on the soccer field or over in Stewart Park yesterday as well.
And this is what we're encouraging. So, again, we think soccer is a relatively low-risk activity. Again, it's outside, usually socially distanced. The contact that you'd have with somebody else is going to be fleeting just for a few seconds or so as you pass through them. So we think soccer is a nice, safe activity. And, again, many of the places in the world that have had big outbreaks play a lot of soccer or football, and there have been no cases associated with people playing soccer. So, again, relatively low-risk activity. But what we do worry about is that if you have a rainy day and everybody practices inside for an hour, I worry about that. I worry about team meetings where people in a small room may be cheering each other on. That's inside cheering, longer activities. I worry about that. But outside, kicking a soccer ball around, go for it.
Well, and the people that I saw yesterday, this wasn't even a team. This was just a group of folks just sort of playing informally, just I think mainly being outside to chat and have a little fun. So folks are trying to find, you know, ways to do that that will work and be safe. And we have seen in some of the professional or college sports, maybe both, in other parts of the country that are further along in their reopening process under their state guidelines, where there have been training camps and things like that, even though there's been the attempt to keep those more socially distant, you have seen a number of cases in the case of certain teams in different sports as they hope to, you know, at least be ready to play at some point up the road, whatever that might be. But certainly the more these teams have been doing things, you are hearing about more cases.
You indeed are. So there have been a number of cases on professional teams. So, for example, among the baseball players who were at spring training, that got canceled again for another week because there were a number of positive cases among baseball players who were doing spring training late to get ready for the season. The Clemson football team had 23 cases among Clemson football players, and even golf had a positive player. Now, having these cases among a team in and of themselves are not horribly worrisome, but what they're worrisome of is that if it's going to spread that much among football players, how much is it going to spread among other kids at college? If it spreads this much among one baseball team, how will it spread among other teams? And while the professional teams have plenty of money and resources to go ahead and test people a lot, the guys at Doc Stewart's don't. So I believe the guys at Doc Stewart's need to be extra careful, and they need to be extra careful by avoiding those high-risk activities. Again, indoors, shouting kind of activities. Now, one of the nice things I hope is coming is, you know, one of the traditions in baseball is for the umpire and the coach to stand belly-to-belly and yell at each other about something ridiculous. I would hope that with COVID, we realize just how ridiculous that is. And I hope I never see that again.
So maybe there you're going to be yelling from 10 feet away or something if it gets to that. I don't know.
Or a Zoom conference. Maybe you do it by teleconference.
I don't know. We're going to take a break. Final segment, talk about contact tracing when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer on Talking Health, 449 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The Afternoon Report at 5 with Douglas County's news team coming up and County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with this final segment. Going to focus mainly on contact tracing this time around. With the reopening phase 2 for Douglas County and many other counties in Oregon, you do have more situations where more people are coming in contact with each other, which I presume makes a well-executed contact tracing all the more important.
Yes. So that as people are in more contact and they're more around, we want to be sure that if people have been exposed to the disease that they can protect themselves and protect those around them. So ideally, the way this works is that if we know about a case, we talk to the person who was sick, we find all the people they were around, talk to them, and quarantine them so that if they come down with the disease, they won't spread it to others. And that's the way it's supposed to work, and that's really the way it's working here in Douglas County. And we're able to do that because we've had relatively few cases. So this takes a lot of time to call everybody, find everybody's contacts. And so we've been able to do it because we've not had so many cases. But if we had 20 or 30 cases a day or 200 cases a day like they did in Union County, there'd be no way for us to do this, and we worry then that the disease would get out of control.
What have some of these counties done where they've had these outbreaks for varying reasons in terms of dealing with contact tracing?
So they've struggled. They've gotten resources from others, so there have been several counties that have been a bit overwhelmed, and we've helped them out. So since we've not had a lot of cases, we have helped out counties by doing their contact tracing, much of which is done by phone and can easily be done from an outside county. So they have gotten help from the state. They've gotten help from other counties. And Douglas County has been really in the forefront of providing help to other counties.
Now, I know there's some sectors of personal services, things like that, where folks are required under the guidelines to keep a log and be able to backtrack and see exactly who was in to see a person over a period of time, things like that. There were some proposals out initially that included other areas. Those weren't done. But for folks that are having these smaller events of varying kinds, it would seem like there's a lot of responsibility there, even if it's not a requirement in the sector that you're operating in, to keep better records.
Well, we know that different countries around the world have used different strategies. So, for example, China and South Korea used very intrusive strategies where they used phone tracking, they used closed-circuit television, they used your credit card receipts to follow where you were to find out who you were around. And that's pretty intrusive. We are not doing any of that here. We are asking when people are together if they can kind of remember who they were around. But since you usually develop symptoms 5 or 6 days after you were exposed, and you may then not get tested for another day or two, we were talking about 10 days ago. And for many of us, it's difficult to remember where we were and who we were with 10 days ago. Now, if people do keep records, that's great, but there's no requirement in Oregon that restaurants or wineries or others pay attention to that. But we're asking people to try and remember back 10 days about where they were.
Well, and it's interesting as well, one of the things in the guidance for some things like churches, I think, and retail, some of the smaller retail places in particular, is sort of these pattern changes where you have, you know, you come in through one set of doors and you go out through another set of doors, and that reduces, if my understanding is correct, the possibility that, you know, you're crossing contact with as many people.
Right. So you don't have to be perfect in epidemiology. You just want to be better than you were before. And so, for example, having separate entrances and exits just decreases the number of people who are standing or crossing each other. And again, the number of contacts you have in a day or in a week really will determine your risk of getting the disease. So you could imagine if you were at a, say, at a crowded situation, an indoor situation, where you're around hundreds of people. And I used in the past my example of the Blazers game, where you'd wait in line for tickets and then wait in line for beer and then wait in line at the toilets, and then you'd be sitting around people who'd be yelling and screaming. You'd have so many contacts that trying to track that down would be almost impossible. However, when I look at my close contacts over the last week, the number has been just my wife. So other than that, we have tried really hard to avoid any other contacts, and that's hard because friends have visited and other people at a party and whatever, and to do those things and still maintain social distancing is difficult.
For contact tracing in Douglas County, I know that there was a process underway to add more folks. Is that still going on, or have more folks have already been added as contact tracers?
Well, we've added some people. We've added some full-time people. We've added some part-time people. Then we've got a good cadre of volunteers. In addition, the state is working with some community-based organizations to provide additional people who could do contact tracing. And so all of that stuff is really very much underway. And it looks like we're going to come up with this great team. And certainly at this time, when there are so many people out of work, any new jobs we can create is a real positive.
Just about out of time. Final thoughts about wearing masks out in public, especially in retail establishments.
So masks can certainly prevent me from giving it to someone else. And since we know that people who are pre-symptomatic, that's a day or two before they come up with symptoms, or are maybe the most contagious, we do this out of courtesy to others, right? So if I'm coming down with the disease over the next few days, I'll be wearing a mask so that I wouldn't give it to somebody in the grocery store or somebody at work. And so we're asking everybody to do that. So if everybody did that, we think we could decrease transmission by a few percent. And again, we don't need to decrease transmission by 100%. A few percent is enough.
County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Denhofer, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up Talking Health for today on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.